Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah, we started to burn too many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singing the Solartopia song with Pete Seeger and David Burns. The theme of our show every month, every week. We are together to talk about the coming age of renewable energy. This is Harvey Wasserman back with the great Kevin Camps, our frequent guest of ours to talk about nuclear issues, and also Donna Gilmore, one of the truly fantastic campaigners in our country on nuclear waste and shutting down these insane nuclear power plants. She was instrumental in the monumental victory of the forces of sanity in shutting down the San Onofre nuclear reactors. Kevin and Donna, so happy to have you with me today.
Thanks, Harvey.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, thank you. Listen, I can't resist talking a little bit about what just happened in Alabama. This lunatic Judge Roy Moore has gotten the nomination for the U.S. Senate. And I just want to point out one small detail I was researching. I wanted to find out what the population, the African-American population of Alabama is. It's about 25%, and we know that there will be a lot of crosses burned on a lot of yards to prevent people from voting in the upcoming election. But Alabama has less than 5 million people. I had no idea it was that small. There are less than five. There are three times as many people in Los Angeles as there are in Alabama, and they get two U.S. Senate seats. I think there's some serious changes that need to be made in how our country is represented. This guy is going to go in there with his gun, and he's got another right-wing lunatic there, and they represent, out of 340 million people, they will represent, let's see, what would that be, 1/68th of the population. So brace yourselves. And, of course, they're going to be both totally pro-nuclear. And we have some serious developments going on with nuclear power. I also want to mention, by the way, I do have a piece I just posted at progressive.org, the Progressive Magazine's website, about Puerto Rico. And I have had on before, and we'll have next week, Mark Summer, to talk about microgrids and how Puerto Rico, among other places, could be set up with a completely solarized economy. And instead of the, one of the biggest problems in Puerto Rico is that the national grid is down, and all these poles and wires were just matchsticks and dental floss for Hurricane Maria came roaring through there. There is zero electric power around except a few areas where they have solar panels, and I presume that those solar panels that weren't blown into the Caribbean are still functioning, and that those are probably the only people on the island who have any power at all are the people with the solar panels. And so my piece in the progressive.org website today suggests that maybe the, when they rebuild Puerto Rico, that they'd not put up a national grid, forget about that, and do a whole network of microgrids so that when the next hurricane comes through, and we know it will, it won't blow everything to pieces. There were 68 hospitals in Puerto Rico, and 58 or 59 of them lost power. People died, literally died, in intensive care units because they lost power, and they couldn't be supported in the midst of an outage. And we have in the United States and all over Europe now, hospitals in particular, that are energy self-sufficient. They have solar panels. They have generators in the basement and battery backups so that this doesn't happen. And I hope to God when they deal with these hospitals in Puerto Rico as they attempt to rebuild, that they make all these hospitals energy self-sufficient, as we need to do, of course, all over the world. There's no reason for a building the size of a hospital or a data center to not be totally off-grid and have batteries in the basement and be energy self-sufficient. So this is a big lesson. Of course, we'll expect the Trump demons to go in there and, as quickly as possible, put up a new grid. They do have... There's actually a coal burner in Puerto Rico. It burns coal that they import from Colombia, if you can imagine that. They burn heavy sludge oil, and they burn gas, and they burn oil, and it's insane. What they need to do, of course, is to go 100% renewable. I'm sure that the sane people in Puerto Rico are going to want to do that, and that the Trump minions are going to go in there, gangbusters, and try and build them a nuclear power plant. So. If you're game, take a look at my piece at progressive.org about the energy future of Puerto Rico and what needs to be done there. Okay, let's get down to the nuclear nitty-gritty. We have the full hour, by the way, Kevin. I told you it was going to be for 40 minutes, but I pushed Mark Summer back till next week so that we can devote full time to this because there is a ton going on with nuclear waste. Many tons, 70,000 tons at least. Donna, let's start with you. You're in San Diego. You've been focused on the San Onofre reactors. There were three there. One of them shut a long, long time ago. And then more recently, thank goodness, and thanks to activism, the other two have been shut. But there are tremendous residual issues with the nuclear waste there. So why don't you, and of course it's generic to all the nuclear reactors that have shut and are shutting and will continue to shut in the hopefully ever nearer future. So Donna, give us a rundown on what's happening with the nuclear waste situation at these two mega reactors between LA and San Diego.
Well, we have a situation here where we currently have 50 nuclear waste canisters, and we didn't really realize this until after the plant shut down, that these canisters, they each hold about a Chernobyl disaster's worth of nuclear waste. Just one canister holds as much lethal cesium-137 as was released from the Chernobyl accident. And we've got 50 of them here. And then I've learned from the NRC that these canisters can crack from various conditions, including salt air, and they have no way to inspect these canisters, inside or out, no way to repair them. It's unbelievable. These things were meant for short-term use, and yet the NRC continues to approve these. And instead of dealing with these problems, Southern California Edison is planning to add 73 more of these thin wall canisters. These are actually used over most of the United States. The rest of the world, they uses these canisters in the United States. There's over 2,000 of them. Most of them are a half inch thick stainless steel. Most of the rest of the world, or pretty much all of the rest of the world, it has spent fuel, their canisters are 10 to 19 and 3/4 inches thick, and they're designed to be inspectable inside and out, monitorable, to prevent leaks. They have parts that will fail, but they have a warning system so they will know ahead of time so they can replace any potential problems. And it's just insane what's going on in this country. Instead of dealing with this, we have a lot of people locally here really just want to get this waste out of here, but they don't understand that step one is dealing with these canisters before you even consider moving the waste anywhere else. These need to be in containers that aren't cracking. And then we also have the issue of the fuel inside the containers. They've been burning the fuel so long, it's called high burn of fuel, that it's actually damaging the fuel assemblies. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is still studying whether you could transport these on the rail system without just normal train vibrations causing the fuel to become damaged. So it's a real mess, and it's been a real challenge to get people educated on this issue.
All right, so let's do a little basic. Donna, we'll continue in a minute. You have, coming out of here, San Onofre, all sorts of nuclear waste, but the primary, and this is, of course, with all these commercial reactors, the primary waste that we're concerned about is the fuel assemblies that have the fuel rods in them that are insanely radioactive. I mean, if you stood next to one of these things, you'd die in a couple minutes. So, and they have pulled out how many tons of these fuel assemblies from San Onofre? Do you know?
I never remember that number. There's 3.6 million pounds or 1,632 metric tons is what we have. But I put it in terms of it's about 89 Chernobyl disasters right here in Southern California. 89
Chernobyl
disasters.
So after they run the reactors for a certain amount of time, the fuel rods, which remain insanely radioactive, are still not strong enough to power the reactors. So they put these fuel rods into swimming pools, basically, although no one would ever live if they swam in them, and they sit there for X number of years. And then the owners and the NRC decide that they are sufficiently diminished in radiation that these fuel assemblies, these hugely radioactive and extremely heavy fuel assemblies, can be lifted out of the pools and put into basically boxes called dry casks that have little mesh holes for ventilation. And then these fuel assemblies are supposed to sit in these dry casks until they can go somewhere else, which there is nowhere else. And so at this point in time, and what you're saying is the dry casks that the NRC and the owners are approving are a half inch thick?
Right. The stainless steel is a half inch thick. They're welded shut. The stainless steel canisters have to go in some kind of a thick concrete overpack, but what they don't normally tell people is there are air vents in that concrete overpack. So your weak link is just that half-inch thick canister. If that starts leaking, the NRC says once a crack starts, it can grow through the wall in about 16 years. We've had canisters here for about 14 years so far. Calvert Cliffs in Maryland, they're already past 20 years, so they have the potential for leaks at any time. Because they can't inspect for them, we don't know what happened. Now, one of the things that's really disconcerting to me is Southern California Edison has asked Areva, the company that makes their existing thin wall canisters, they want them to no longer monitor the outlet air vents. There's an inlet air vent and an outlet air vent. If the canisters were leaking, the radiation would obviously go out the outlet air vent. It's convection cooling. And they want to request that they no longer have to measure what's coming out of the air vents, only what's going in. Yeah. Yeah.
Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, you want to jump in on this?
Yeah, these problems date back a long ways. The first dry cast storage in the country was in Surrey, Virginia, 1986. I got involved at Palisades, Michigan in 1992 when they moved to dry cast storage on the beach at Lake Michigan. So there's a lot of similarities. I mean, you know, they've been storing radioactive waste in dry casks on the beach of Lake Michigan since 1993, and now they're storing irradiated nuclear fuel on the beach at the Pacific Ocean at San Onofre. So we've known about these problems. We've fought hard to prevent worse from happening. And so this bill in Congress that we're facing now is the biggest radioactive waste fight in Congress that we've faced in 15 years since the big Yucca Mountain votes of 2002 when our federal government overrode Nevada's veto. Nevada said, we don't want to be your waste dump. We've already suffered enough from nuclear weapons testing. The federal government, both houses of Congress said, too bad, we're sticking it to you anyway. So here we go again, and you know, it's going to make things worse, as Donna has pointed out in her fact sheets about this bill. It's going to make the radioactive waste dilemmas and nightmares even worse. And the one thing I really want to highlight is be careful what you wish for, because I've got the maps of the L.A. area pulled up right now showing where the transports, and the, to the best of our knowledge, it would be mostly rail, if not entirely rail, the rail routes for shipping irradiated nuclear fuel through the Los Angeles area crisscross the metro area. So the San Onofre wastes leaving the area by rail are clearly shown. This other route that goes from west to east across L.A., I assume might be Diablo Canyon's waste, perhaps after it's offloaded from a barge at Oxnard onto a train and then crossing the L.A. area. So I would warn folks who are behaving in a very NIMBY fashion in Southern California, get it out of here. We don't care where it goes or how it gets there. This material could roll past your house. I mean, it's dangerous enough going 0 miles per hour at San Onofre, and it's going to be a lot more dangerous in transit. A danger that doesn't get talked about much, but you did kind of touch upon it, that thick concrete layer for dry casks, that is radiation shielding, because workers work around these dry casks. So in transport, they also have radiation shielding. Usually it's in the form of metal, steel. But the NRC allows for some gamma and some neutron to escape these transport containers. So if you're 6 feet away, you're getting a chest X-ray or two per hour. You're getting a 10 millirem per hour dose by permission of the NRC. If you're right at the cask surface, you're getting 200 millirem per hour. That's 20 to 40 chest X-rays per hour. That's if everything goes smoothly. And then if you have an accident or an attack, and one of the things these containers are vulnerable to in transit would be an anti-tank missile, which are designed to go through thick tank armor, much thicker than the radiation shielding on these shipping casks. You could have a large-scale radioactivity release, hazardous radioactivity release, in downtown metro L.A. So that's the weakest link of all when it comes to radioactive waste, is moving it.
Wow. Donna, these casks that Kevin's talking about, I mean, you're saying that the casks in Europe are 10 to just under 20 inches thick, and the casks in the United States are a half inch thick?
Correct.
Oh, God. I mean, what are they doing? Taking, like, recycled pop cans and putting this stuff in that? I mean, how do they get away with 1/40th of the strength in the United States that they're doing in Europe?
Well, I've got a report that talks about that. The decision was made to use the thin ones because they cost less. They're not cheap. The price is up to about $4 million a piece now, counting labor and materials, just for the thin ones. But they made a decision because it was cheaper, period, not because it was safer. And we have a captured regulatory organization. You've got five NRC commissioners that are appointed by the president, but they have to be confirmed by the Senate. And we end up with a majority of the commissioners that are more concerned about corporate profits than they are about safety. And then if you want to get promoted in nuclear in management at the NRC, you better play nice with the nuclear industry. Now, the working level people at the NRC, a lot of them really know what's going on, but they have a very bad safety culture at the NRC. So they are afraid to, you know, speak up for fear of retaliation. But what I've tried to do is take the information that is available from the working level people and at these NRC meetings they have, because the information is hidden in plain sight. And I put that on San Onofre Safety. I've got a nuclear waste page, and every bit of information is substantiated with NRC or other official documents or national lab documents. So the website is a tool for people to get involved. It's got handout. It's got all kinds of information to get involved in this, because they, you know, I thought the NRC was doing their job, and I learned the hard way that they're not. So we have to make up the difference, because there's nobody else out there to protect us, and we need more help. Now, I want to say something about this bill, the Nuclear Waste Policy Act Amendment, H.R. 3053. Daryl Issa is one of the sponsors of this, and he's right here by San Onofre.
He's a right wing congressman. He was a big he made a bunch of money.
Yeah,
I think he's the richest guy
in Congress. Democrats and Republicans congressmen are supporting this bill, but they don't know what's in it. The bill took me over 2 days just to analyze, and it actually will take away federal, state, and local water and air rights. It allows them to take property, state property. I mean, the bill is a major impact to states' rights and local rights. One of the most egregious things is when they want to approval to build these nuclear waste storage facilities, and they have a condition in there that says once the Department of Energy creates one of these what they call MRA agreements, is the term, with private companies, it removes any oversight, input, or transparency of what's going on at these facilities. I mean, legally, they don't even have to tell you if they're leaking. I mean, that's really what's in this law. And the people voting for it don't know this. The other major thing it does is there are a lot of good safety requirements in the current law, the current Nuclear Waste Policy Act law, for both storage and transport, and for selecting sites. They want to strip all that out. These MRA agreements that DOE makes, they do not have to comply with those storage and transport safety requirements that are critical for preventing leaks. I have listened to every session they've had in the committees, House committees on this, and not one person has mentioned the things that I'm mentioning right now about removing safety requirements, removing oversight and transparency, and it also allows the bill transfers utility liability to the federal government without addressing all the critical storage and transport issues, and it doesn't address the costs. So,
who drafted this bill?
This does not get discussed. What's that?
Who wrote this bill?
John Simkin, Republican from Illinois.
He's sponsoring it, but it looks like it was written by one of these vendors or nuclear industry.
Yeah. Well, you're right. The Nuclear Energy Institute wrote the bill. They handed it to John Simkin. He introduced it last April. And now there are something like 65 co-sponsors, mostly Republicans, but a fair number of Democrats. And I would encourage listeners to call your U.S. representatives. We all have one for American citizens and residents. Not all of them get to vote, like Washington, D.C. or Puerto Rico or the Virgin Islands. But call your U.S. representatives. The Capitol switchboard number is area code 202-225-3121. If you don't know who your representative is, there's a simple website, which is simply www.house.gov. You enter your zip code. It tells you who your rep is. This vote is coming up very likely in the next week or two or three. Shimkus from Illinois, the Republican sponsor of the bill, has been trying to suspend the rules on this bill because he did so well in the Energy and Commerce Committee on June 28th. It was a 49-4 blowout vote. And thankfully, four Democrats stood up, had some courage. Schakowsky from the Chicago area, for one. So Tsimkas is treating this like he's naming a post office, you know, a suspension of ordinary rules. They would take a voice vote on the floor of the House. If two-thirds of the people present thought it was a good idea, it passes into law, at least on the House side. We could talk about the Senate, too. But it would be a huge blow to us if on a suspension vote, a non-controversial matter, it's cleared the House. That would really tee it up for the Senate. So this is a real emergency. Folks need to call your U.S. representative and urge them to oppose H.R. 3053. The formal name is the Nuclear Waste Policy Amendments Act of 2017. Urge them not only to oppose it and vote against it on the floor, but to stop it from reaching the floor, and certainly to stop it from being treated as a non-controversial matter. There is no more controversial matter that will impact our country for longer into the future than this radioactive waste legislation.
Devastating. Devastating. What would happen if this passes, Donna, at the Senate offering?
Well, in reality, what will happen is companies like Holtec that make canisters and want to build sites to store waste, they will get money up front to build these things, but there's a good chance this waste would never even make it there. So we're gonna waste tons of money paying these companies to build systems. And I looked at the plans of what they're planning for these interim storage sites. They want to take these existing aging canisters that probably are already cracking. The NRC is not even requiring them to be inspected for cracks before they're shipped, mainly because they don't have the technology to inspect them, and haul them across the country and put them in the, you know, in the same kind of inferior system. Here's how crazy this is. The Holtec just received approval for a transport cast for the fuel for the canisters. In the approval, they are not requiring that they inspect the inside or outside to see if the fuel or the canister's safe enough for transport. And then, which is so crazy, the transport cast does not include unloading it. Only for loading it and transporting, but not unloading it. It's insane what's going on, but it's going to waste tons of money. In the meantime, we got these ticking time bomb Chernobyl cans sitting here that could start leaking in a very short period of time. And Edison and the other locations, they have no plan of what they're going to do if these things leak. They have no plan in place to deal with leaks. And, you know, like I say, each one of these is a Chernobyl's worth of radiation. Not a Chernobyl reactor in a can, but only just the disaster that circled the world.
How far are these canisters at Santa Fe and at Diablo Canyon and at some of these other reactors from the ocean?
At San Onofre, it's about 100 feet from the ocean. They're trying to put in this, 100 feet. 100
are they
feet
at sea level?
They're trying to put them. They're about three, maybe a foot from the water table. They're actually trying to bury them. They were going to put this new experimental system in, or that's what they're planning to do. It's supposed to be all below ground except for the lids on the concrete. It has air vents. They hit the water table halfway down, so now they're just building it halfway underground. It's an absolute mess. Totally uninspectable experimental system. The Vermont Yankee utility company, they would not even choose the system, this Holtec system we have here. They said it's too experimental, it's too unproven, too expensive, too complicated. But, you know, I think Southern California Edison should get the award for making the worst decisions of any nuclear plant. But, you know, Kevin may have some that that can compete with that.
The Vermont Yankee situation does use Holtec casks, maybe not the exact same design as at San Onofre, but there are plenty of problems with Holtec, including violations of quality assurance that we've known about since 2003, thanks to whistleblowers and industry and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So DEPCATS with Citizens Awareness Network in the Northeast has called Holtec and other bad dry cask designs garbage cans of death. And one of the worst designs in the country, and they stopped making it a long time ago, it was so bad, is the VSC-24 ventilated storage cask holding 24 pressurized water reactor assemblies that they made them in the 90s, and then they stopped because one of the things that happened was they suffered fires and explosions. They had an explosion at Point Beach, Wisconsin, in one of these containers. At Palisades, they had a fire. The other place they use those is Arkansas. At Palisades, the dry casks are not only just 150 yards from the water of Lake Michigan. I think they're a little bit closer than that. That's what the company says. But they're located on the beach, and there's nothing under them. They're on a concrete pad that's 3 foot thick. But under the concrete pad, there's 55 feet of loose sand. And 55 feet down, there's a glacial till. That's the closest thing to bedrock. But, you know, it violates NRC earthquake safety regulations. An NRC whistleblower revealed that way back in 1994. NRC has done nothing about it. These problems are all across the country, and I wanted to mention that I just got a letter to the editor in the LA Times a couple weeks ago where I made the point, because LA Times had run an editorial that pretty much said, get it out of here, we don't care where it goes, we don't care how it gets there. And I made the point that it would make sense to move this waste a few miles to the east, deeper into the heart of Camp Pendleton Marine Corps Base, away from the tsunami zone, away from the coastal earthquake fault lines, away from the rising sea levels, further inland to higher ground, with the added advantage of many thousands of U.S. Marines to help guard it. That makes a whole lot more sense than shipping it 1,000 miles to the east to a place like the Texas-New Mexico borderlands where these centralized interim storage facilities are proposed. This raises huge environmental justice concerns. Those are majority Hispanic communities in that area. The other proposal in H.R. 3053 is the Yucca Dump, which is Western Shoshone Indian land. So these proposals that Representative Shimkus and Representative Issa and too many California Democrats are pushing to get the waste out of their districts are targeting low-income people of color communities that are already badly polluted from fossil fuel industries, nuclear industries. They are not scientifically suitable, and they are not consent-based. So they're violating the basic criteria for radioactive waste management.
I want to point out, by the way, since I have been in Yucca Mountain, there's some activists here in California that keep saying, well, let's take it from San Onofre and move it to Yucca Mountain. Yucca Mountain is a dormant volcano in the middle of Nevada. It's about 80 miles from Las Vegas. I have walked through it. I've been through it, and I went in with a geologist who halfway through said, well, there's the earthquake fault. And he showed me the earthquake fault going through this tunnel. They've blown about, I don't know, $8, $10, $12 billion there already. In 2000, I think it was 8, there was an official estimate for finishing Yucca Mountain, $96 billion. This was 10 years ago and 10 years to build. So you can triple that. And anybody that thinks, anybody wants to advocate moving anything to Yucca Mountain, you better be prepared to live with what you think is going to go there for a long, long time. And, of course, there's also science that says that if you stick 70,000 tons of high-level nuclear waste into a closed environment like the tunnels that they want to build in Yucca Mountain, sooner or later the heat's going to accumulate and that place will blow up. So, I mean, forget about Yucca Mountain. Donna Gilmore in San Diego. We're talking with Donna Gilmore, a great activist in San Diego on the San Onofre.
I'm actually in Orange County, so I'm in San Clemente,
oh,
about
County.
5 miles
right.
away. Yeah, but the, San Onofre sits on Camp Pendleton property at the border of Orange County and San Diego County.
Well, what do you advocate, having listened to Kevin and been with us for a long, long time, What do you advocate actually doing with this stuff? What do you think is what we, you know, we who have fought nuclear power are suddenly now being tasked with coming up with a solution for plants of radioactive waste that we didn't want created in the first place. But do you have any idea what you would actually do with this stuff?
Are you asking me? This is Donna.
Yes, Donna. I actually
have a paper on the homepage of San Onofre Safety with recommendations. The first thing we need to do, unfortunately, we're likely going to need to build hot cell facilities on site. They're very expensive, but I don't see another option based on the evidence I have. And that would be a helium-filled building where you can load the fuel from these cracking canisters into a thick wall cast, and then you store them in a building for additional environmental and security protection. It would be in a hardened facility. That really should be done before we even try and move them across the freeway to another place on Camp Pendleton, because I'm not sure they will get there. They've got high burnup fuel that is known to damage the cladding just sitting there. I ended up educating Per Peterson, who was on Obama's Blue Ribbon Commission. He had told our audience down here at a public meeting that nothing can go wrong after dry storage. And I educated him on the high burnup fuel risk. He didn't know, and now he knows, but he's still not dealing with it. And I educated former chairman Allison McFarland, who's one of the more safety-conscious persons. She didn't even know that these canisters can't be inspected. She had no clue. So there's a big disconnect in the knowledge base. But at any rate, so you get them in a thick wall cask, and there's more to it than just thick walls, but, you know, that's just kind of a short way for people to understand. And then you're able to monitor them. But to think that you're going to transport these things, I mean, if that bill goes through, you're really asking, if you're in California or in the Southwest and you're just trying to get rid of your waste, what you don't realize is this bill would authorize all the waste from the East Coast and the South and the Midwest to all come to New Mexico, Arizona, and Nevada. So I don't think the plan you want is to have the waste we have here, as bad as it is, you know, join with a lot more waste coming our way to me to make the trip. So, but I think that's the best we can do right now is to get it in safer containers. But we're running out of time. Now, this high burn of fuel that they've been using in these canisters, it actually creates gases that can be rather explosive. If you get it exposed to a certain amount of air, they can actually explode, and that's an issue that really hasn't been addressed very well. But instead, what Edison plans to do is destroy the spent fuel pool as soon as they get all the fuel out of the pools, and right now that's all we have to deal with problem canisters at the pool. I was on a call. This is very interesting. I was on a call with the NRC today. They were talking about licensing a whole tech canister with even hotter fuel. And I asked the person, I said, well, exactly what is going to happen if one of these canisters leaks radiation? He didn't know. I said, are there any documents? Do you have documentation, especially if there's hybrid? He didn't know. He wasn't aware of anything. And I said, well, what's the plan if one of them leaks? I said, Edison has been... They haven't given us what they're going to do with one of these canisters leaks. No plan. What does the NRC require? Well, you know, we kind of leave it up to them. He had no clue. And this is the guy that's licensing these canisters. Can you believe that?
God. Yeah, I can believe it. You know, these people are completely irresponsible. We're talking with a criminal. We're talking with Donna Gilmore and Kevin Camps, two of our leading experts on nuclear waste, who obviously know more about this than the regulators and the industry and the whole field. Donna, why do they want to destroy the spent fuel pools? What's the point?
There's always one answer in the one word answer, and the answer isn't love. That's for sure. It's money, or love of money. I even had one of the employees at Santa Rosa says, "Oh yeah, they want to get rid of the pool so they can get rid of me." I mean, they're just trying to reduce their overhead, and the pools are expensive to maintain. So they just do everything for money, and they delude themselves into thinking everything will be okay. They're delusional people. And when we have hearings like we've had on this 3053 bill, I mean, the people that they bring to speak are people that are just going to support what the nuclear industry is saying. Not one person has been there that has told the truth to these congressmen. So they don't know the truth. So if we don't tell them, they're not going to know.
Well, I'll just say that Ed Lyman from Union of Concerned Scientists was the sole voice of sanity on the witness panel at this government oversight hearing that just took place a couple days ago. Don is right. Everybody else was pretty much an industry hack with different motivations for doing what they're doing to support the industry's agenda. But I'll point out that Ed Lyman, you know, has a long history of nuclear safety advocacy. One area of that goes way back to 2003 when he joined a team of co-authors, including Allison McFarland, who then later became the NRC chairman, as Donna mentioned. And what they pointed out in this January 2003 study was that the pools in the United States are mega catastrophes waiting to happen. So I just wanted to make clear that the pools are a huge danger. And in that paper, they advocated status quo dry cast storage as an alternative to these dangers of the pools. We've been pointing out since 2002 as an alternative to Yucca, as an alternative to these de facto permanent parking lot dumps, that hardened on-site storage, which means a significant safety and security upgrade to current dry cast storage, as Donna's been talking about. You know, thickening the walls is one aspect of that. Monitoring is another aspect. All of this is not happening. Fortifications to prevent terrorist attacks on these dry cast storage facilities. So we've been pushing that for 15 years. We've been ignored. It's fallen on deaf ears. But luckily, Ed was able to make some important points at the hearing the other day. We've got to build on that. Again, I encourage people to call your U.S. representatives. You asked, Harvey, what can be done. We have to stop this very bad bill from becoming law or advancing closer to becoming law. I'll point out a little good news. We've had a record-breaking number of reactor shutdowns in just the past few years, including San Onofre 2 and 3, which means, by definition, reactor core meltdowns can't happen anymore once they're defueled. But the pools remain, and that is an ongoing risk of a mega catastrophe. It was narrowly averted at Fukushima Daiichi Unit Number 4 by sheer luck. And instead of 160,000 nuclear evacuees, the number could have been 35 million or 50 million. Those numbers come from the Prime Minister, Naoto Kan, who was serving at the time. They had a secret contingency plan in the works to evacuate up to 50 million people if the high-level radioactive waste storage pool at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 had caught fire. I agree with Donna's point about keeping the pools operational, although it's ironic, it's counterintuitive, emptying them into hardened on-site storage as close as possible. I mentioned moving it a few miles into Camp Pendleton, away from the ocean. But keeping the pools operational as a place to deal with failing tasks in the future, because the hazardous persistence of radioactive waste is measured in the millions of years. They're going to have to replace even thick-walled casks someday. I mean, they're not magical materials. They're metals. They're going to corrode eventually, no matter how thick the wall. If you look at, you know, iodine-129 with a hazardous persistence of 153 million years, even thick-walled casks are going to turn to dust and blow away and release the iodine-129 unless they're replaced from time to time. And granted, the thick walls are going to last longer than the thin walls, but we're going to face this problem for many future generations. So the first thing to do is to stop the really bad ideas, which are going to be the final word on this stuff if they get away with it. We can't let them move it to the Texas-New Mexico borderlands where it's going to be abandoned at the surface and allowed eventually to leak out. That's what's going to happen there, threatening those majority Hispanic communities and what's below the Oglala Aquifer, vital to life on the Great Plains across 8 states.
Yeah, the something that people don't understand is this is a now problem. These canisters have been sitting around for 14, 16, 20 years, and we don't have much time. It could be just any time or a few short years. The thick wall caps, as Kevin says, are not going to last forever. The idea is that you have them in containers that meet the basic requirements of a car, that you can inspect it, maintain it, repair it, and monitor it to prevent a major problem. I mean, you don't need to feel like a nuclear expert to ask for those basic requirements. And that's what we're talking about here. And that obviously they'll have to be replaced, and, you know, so that's, you know, that's definitely true what Kevin said.
Well, I got to say that I've had a lot of depressing shows, but this one takes the cake, man. I mean, you know, this whole thing about nuclear waste, everybody's been talking about it, but you guys, you know the detail, and the detail is worse than the general big picture stuff. I mean, it's just insane to think that these half-inch thick tin cans filled with the deadliest substances human beings have ever created are sitting 100 feet from the ocean. I mean, my God. And these, of course, the companies want to walk away, and I'm sure that they will. And there won't be, you know, there's so few people who know the detail of this. It's devastatingly depressing. I wonder very quickly, Kevin, when we talked earlier, you mentioned a new development at Palisades in Michigan. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, it's the latest bait and switch in the country where nuclear utilities say they're going to close a reactor and they use it as leverage to get money to keep the reactor open. So in this case, Entergy Nuclear, which is New Orleans-based, bought Palisades in 2007 from the previous owner, Consumers Energy. Entergy last December said, we're closing Palisades. And it's true, Entergy is trying to get out of the competitive marketplace nuclear business because they can't compete with other sources of electricity. But I suspected from the beginning that this was another bait and switch, like we've seen in Illinois with Exelon and New York State with Entergy itself, as well as Exelon, getting these massive bailouts. So just last Thursday, the Michigan Public Service Commission said, hey, Entergy, yes, we will allow ratepayers to bail you out to the tune of $142 million so that you can shut down Palisades a few years early compared to what you had been planning previously. And it was less than what Entergy was asking. And so Entergy just left the room. They said, nope, deal's over. We're going to keep operating till 2022. So Palisades is one of the most risky atomic reactors in the country and probably in the world, a reactor pressure vessel that is highly embrittled, at risk of fracturing and having a meltdown. Other pathways to meltdown include the lid of the reactor that is 10 years overdue for a replacement, the steam generators, which are degraded and would have to be replaced for the second time in the reactor's history, which is uniquely bad in industry. And another uniquely bad pathway to reactor meltdown at Palisades is they have had 45 years of control rod drive mechanism failures going on at Palisades. And Dave Lockbaum at Union of Concerned Scientists has pointed out most utilities, when they see a problem, they solve a problem, like control rod drive mechanism failures. Luckily, they didn't have a meltdown. They solved the problem. Palisades has had this problem for 45 years. They keep slapping on Band-Aids. So we have about 5 more years now of radioactive Russian roulette on the Lake Michigan shoreline, which is the drinking water supply, all told for 40 million people downstream in 2 countries and a large number of Native American First Nations. So it's like a hostage taking. The hostage takers had demanded a ransom. They didn't get all that they asked for, and they've kept the hostage. And the hostage is the future and our safety, our security, our environment, our health. That's what's being held hostage so that Entergy can pay its CEO $20 million a year, can pay its workers $100,000 a year, while the NRC is colluding, and also its staff people are being paid, you know, well over $100,000 a year, $150,000 a year, to keep this game going that puts all of us downwind and downstream at risk. And they're going to keep making waste, too.
Wow. How many are there two reactors at Palisades or one?
There's one.
There's one reactor at Palisades. I mean, it's absolutely sickening. And, of course, the deal has been cut at Diablo Canyon.
46 years old now.
46? God.
46. The deal fired up in March of 1971.
So this reactor was probably designed in the late 1950s. This is 60, 70-year-old technology.
It's the most embrittled reactor pressure vessel in the country. Unfortunately, the second worst in that regard is right across Lake Michigan in northern Wisconsin at Point Beach Unit 2. So woe is Lake Michigan. It is wedged between the two most highly embrittled reactor pressure vessels in the country.
Is there any movement to shut Point Beach?
Well, Kewaunee was shut down just a few years ago. So there are some good groups up there, groups like Nuke Watch of Wisconsin, keeping an eye on things. So the fight is on to protect our drinking water supplies.
And, of course, there's been a deal cut at Diablo Canyon to allow those two reactors to operate deep into the 2020s. And no doubt when push comes to shove, PG&E will go in to the Public Utilities Commission and all the people that cut the deal with them and say that those two reactors also need to continue to operate, even though they're surrounded by earthquake faults and a mere less than 50 miles from the San Andreas Fault. Kevin, one of those
Diablo units is on the short list of worst embrittled reactor pressure vessels as well.
Kevin Camps, how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, our website is beyondnuclear.org, and as Donna mentioned, we have various resources there on all of these issues, so check it out. And call your U.S. representative. Say no to
Donna Gilmore.
3053.
All right, we got a few more minutes, but I always want to make sure I get your contacts in early. Donna Gilmore, how do people get a hold of you and see your information?
SantaOnofreeSafety.org. You can reach me through the website, SantaOnofreeSafety.org. And I want to talk about, what can we do, okay? In California, there's a Coastal Commission meeting on October 11th in the morning in Chula Vista. So we would like people to show up for that. And if you want to get more involved and active or know what you can do to make a difference and not give up, please contact the website because we could use more help. And on my wish list, John Oliver did a show about nuclear waste, and he got millions of hits in one day, let alone the people that watched him. I would like for him to do a part two that deals with this dry storage issue. So if anybody's got contacts, we could use some media attention to get this issue out to the public. I think if people really knew what was going on, it would make all the difference in the world.
When did he do that show?
It was one of his recent, just before he went on a break. It's on YouTube now. You look up John Oliver and nuclear waste. It was kind of a part one, but we really need the part two. So
yeah. And unfortunately, he kind of was promotional of the yucca dump. He said, maybe yucca is the answer. And I wrote a rebuttal to that. Of course it's not. There's, three decades of grassroots resistance. Over 1,000 environmental groups in the country have resisted yucca over the last 30 years. So he was wrong on that score. Some points he made good, but yucca is not the answer.
We just need to educate him. We just need to educate him. He puts on he does a great job of what he takes on, and he got some things wrong because he doesn't know better. He talked to the wrong people. He needs to talk to us.
And we have had experience with wonderful state-of-the-art nuclear facilities. The Waste Isolation Pilot Project in New Mexico, which was basically a blank check. They spent all the money in the world to get high-level military waste in there. It was going to last forever, and 3 years ago, they put the wrong kind of kitty litter, and one nuclear waste barrel blew up and contaminated more than 20 workers, shut the place down for 3 years, and cost billions of dollars. That's just the small state-of-the-art thing. I can't imagine what they think they're going to do at Yucca Mountain. It will never happen. I mean, they will that $96 billion initial estimate is going to triple. It'll take them 30 years if they ever try to start to do it. I do want to hit one small issue here. We're really almost out of time. These guys that were running around saying nuclear waste is a resource and could be used to fuel new nuclear power plants in the future. Kevin, do you want to quickly comment on that? I mean, these guys must have been on acid or something, but just put that one to rest, will you?
Some more headline news. North Korea used its irradiated nuclear fuel to get the plutonium to put in its nuclear weapons. So that's one of the biggest dangers of so-called recycling or reprocessing high-level radioactive waste, is once you separate out the plutonium for whatever purpose, let's say you're going to use it as a reactor fuel, but you change your mind and use it as a bomb ingredient. So that actually is the proposal at Holtec, at the Eddie Lee Energy Alliance in New Mexico, 8 miles from the WIP site that you mentioned. They want to reprocess commercial irradiated nuclear fuel. In addition to storing it there, they want to do it with 120,000 tons worth. There's only 80,000 right now in the country. So they are crazy. They are blinded by dollar signs, and they're willing to risk nuclear weapons proliferation. Reprocessing is also hugely polluting to the atmosphere and to surface and groundwaters. And I mentioned the Oglala aquifers out there. So we have to stop these things. One way folks could do it, besides just simply contacting your representative, is get together with your friends and neighbors and demand a meeting with your U.S. representative, or at least their staff, and let it be known to them that they need to vote against this bill.
Well, reprocessing is a total myth, right? What countries have tried reprocessing and failed?
Several. France is kind of the world leader in reprocessing, and they have poisoned the Atlantic
Ocean.
France,
Japan. France, Japan, Germany, everybody's failed at it. Thank you. You guys are tremendous. Donna Gilmore, Kevin Camps, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, everybody involved with the production here. We'll see you next week in Solartopia.
Solartopia, don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia.